Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the show. I am Chris Graham, and I'm joined by Crystal Graham. It's Tuesday, and on Tuesdays, we talk news and culture, sometimes politics, just what's going on in the world. It's a beautiful, feels like fall day outside. I know it's a little warm in the sun, but it feels great. Crystal, you're in from checking on the flowers outside of the home office here. Hopefully things are going well with that. Hopefully things are going well with you.
Yeah, it's a great day. Like you said, it's a little warm in the sun, but I did take a walk around the yard and things are blooming and beautiful this time of year. It always is. So we have been enjoying as many walks as we can and that kind of thing in the evenings. And you, of course, got to go to a college football game on Saturday.
Oh my gosh. It was like, and there were people there, and not just like 10 people or 100 people, but there were over 40,000, not quite like down at Tech for their opener with North Carolina Friday night when that one, Crystal, do I understand correctly that the Enter Sandman entrance for the Virginia Tech football team registered on the Richter scale?
Yeah, you know, there's a radio host in Charlottesville, Tom Morgan, and he posted a link to that story on his Facebook page today. So I read the headline only, but that wouldn't surprise me. I shared on the Augusta Free Press Facebook page the video from that, and it was insane. I can't imagine. I know a number of people who are probably listening actually attended that football game. And I can imagine it felt amazing to be among such a big crowd. I think they said it was the first full, you know, sold out game since November of 2019.
Yeah. And that would have, I can't think of what game that would have been, but Virginia Tech football, hey, you know, with North Carolina, the big win over North Carolina, that was huge for Virginia Tech. Maybe not so good for the ACC. We knocked one of our top 10 teams out, but Tech's now going to be, I haven't seen a poll. They should be out this afternoon with the late end to our week one because there were games. There was a game last night. Hey, Virginia Tech football is back, and the team is back. Well, good win for the team. Great win for the team. And the fans are back. And I imagine eventually the fans will get back to UVA. The opener was William & Mary. That's why the attendance was depressed a bit, I think. The students were out in numbers. The alumni were out in numbers. Not a lot of folks from the local community, if you want to say. This weekend might be tough, too. I've got an 11 o'clock kickoff to attend. 11 a.m. kickoff to attend. Brunch at Scott Stadium. that'll be tough to get the fans out for that one. But, you know, with Notre Dame coming up later in the season, Virginia Tech at home later in the season, those should be well-attended games. So, but man, just seeing it across the landscape, you know, I had a night game on Saturday, Wisconsin and their jump around tradition at the end of the third quarter. Fox stayed with that. 90,000 people roughly jumping around to the House of Pain song was great to see. It was just great, you know, just flipping across the channels all weekend and seeing fans at games. It was really nice.
So we'd like to believe that COVID is something of the past, but I'm going to shift now to talking about news, Chris. And in Augusta County, the state average, it looks like when you compare Augusta County to the state average, it continues to be about almost three times the state average when it comes to the caseload related to COVID-19. Do you want to update folks on the latest regarding COVID and the Delta variant, and particularly the numbers in Augusta County?
Yeah, Augusta County, which, I mean, it's part of our home base. We're physically based in the city of Waynesboro. And for those who are maybe new to Virginia or don't pay close attention to these kind of things, Waynesboro is not in Augusta County. Stanton's not. Cities in Virginia are not in the county. They're independent. But we're surrounded by Augusta County, so it's our home base. Augusta County, 108.7 new COVID cases per 100,000 population over the past 7 days. It's, as you mentioned, Crystal, I did the math. It's almost triple the state average of 37.7 new cases per 100,000 population over the past 7 days. And it's consistent. I mean, it's right in line with where it was here in Augusta County last week. Now, I did some numbers from across the region. For the most part, some catching up, not quite anywhere near the highest rate of our other neighbors, Harrisonburg, 88.8. And Harrisonburg last week was in the 30s. So sort of a blip there in the last 7 days in Harrisonburg. But for the most part, Stanton 64.8, Waynesboro 51.1, Albemarle with a really good vaccination rate, only at 29.0, a fourth of where Augusta County is. And so I think you're seeing for the most part, at least to some degree, the impact of vaccination rates. Albemarle County, I mentioned 81.5% of adults there with at least one dose of COVID vaccines, 63.1% fully, 74.8% fully vaccinated, compared to Augusta County, 61.6% one dose, so almost 20% fewer, and then 57% fully vaccinated, again, almost 20% fewer. So, you know, we got to get those vax numbers up. That's a big key to this.
Yeah, I was reading a national story too, just where it really broke it down related to kids and schools and, you know, the way that we're going to stay open and the way that kids are going to have as normal of a school year as possible really relies on adults getting vaccinated. At least that's what the story said. So definitely plenty of opportunities to still get vaccinated throughout the region. We shared a few of those links on our Facebook page. Whether you're in Harrisonburg or Augusta County, there was information on that on our Facebook page. So we definitely, you know, as people who live here in Waynesboro, you know, and like you said, surrounded by Augusta County, want to see those numbers go down. And a lot of things could be at play, you know, including the Labor Day weekend. We'll still have to see how the numbers go up or down after that, as well as, you know, kids are back in school now, football games are taking place, that kind of thing. And from what I understand, the stands are packed there as well, and not necessarily people wearing masks. So I'm not sure what exactly is required when you go to a county football game. I know when we attended an indoor volleyball match recently, we were told that masks were required for that. So at least for indoor events, they're requiring masks. And I guess it varies county by county. I know we attended a volleyball match at Wilson Memorial High School against Turner Ashby, and Rockingham County schools are actually requiring their athletes to wear masks. So Turner Ashby was wearing masks, Wilson was not. So just a way, I guess it's division by division as far as, you know, what they're doing for the athletes and for the students.
Yeah. And you mentioned the at football games, you know, we haven't been to a high school football game this year. We've seen the pictures. I think you mentioned that. I mean, you know, the pictures, well, I was at the UVA game. Now I was in the press box, but not required when you're in the open air part of the press box, you weren't required. We weren't required as media members to wear masks in the open air part. So that would mean that obviously the folks in the stadium, not, required either. And so, yeah, it seems to be, you know, hit or miss in that respect. I mean, you know, the thing about this is, yeah, you're seeing breakthrough cases with people who have the vaccination. But the hospital numbers, the case numbers, et cetera, are largely a function of vaccination status being not vaccinated. And so you're seeing that be the case. But yeah, the numbers are up, you know, still pretty high statewide and certainly here locally with Augusta County, at least. And again, that's an anomaly. We talked about this last week, but Augusta County's numbers are much higher, even though others are above the state average too in our region. Augusta's are much higher. And that just does it to me. I'm trying to figure it out. I really can't figure out why.
Okay, Chris. So the other thing we wanted to talk about is some of those federal benefits that were available for people filing unemployment. Those kind of expired, I think, the first week of September. So we're kind of gearing up unemployment, shifting back to kind of the way it was before COVID. I thought maybe you could break down exactly how the Virginia Employment Commission is handling that and what people can expect if they're filing for unemployment.
Yeah, you know, the end of the temporary federal benefit programs was last week. It was September 4th, basically. So as of September 5th in Virginia, the unpaid waiting week, we call it the waiting week for unemployment insurance, has been reinstated. The waiting week is the very first week of an unemployment claim. If you're out there, if you must claim that week and meet all eligibility requirements, nobody is paid for that first week. You know, dating back to March of 2020, the beginning of the pandemic, Governor Ralph Northam, part of his executive order related to the state of emergency, waived that waiting week policy for all Virginia unemployment claimants. So now that's back. And so that means you're not paid for the first week. The first payable week will be the second week of your claim. That, you know, it's different. So, and it's definitely something to have to deal with. So this all comes at the same time with the federal benefits expiring last week. And now this unpaid waiting week coming back in Virginia. It's definitely going to hit some people pretty hard.
Yeah, I would think so. And of course, we've got that story on our website now. There's information about where you can go to learn about your eligibility, more information about VEC services, that kind of thing. You've got links to both of those in your story. So definitely, if you're looking for more information or looking how you submit your weekly claim, that kind of information, all that's in the story that was posted today on Augusta Free Press. So definitely check that out. Another really interesting story that you and I were kind of chatting about this morning morning, Chris, relates to the Virginia Department of Forestry and how they're seeking basically certain acorns and nuts, like basically asking you to bring those to the Augusta Forestry Center in Cremora. Do you want to update folks on what they're looking for?
Well, I included this for two reasons. Yeah, we were chatting about it this morning. And also, the Augusta Forestry Center in Cremora is where I had my first job. I was 15 years old and spent a good part of my that spring that year, which would have been in, 10th grade, working. I'm the most allergic person in the world, but I was out there working, helping pick up basically what were going to be Christmas trees eventually, pine trees, beautiful trees. So for me, a throwback in that respect, some good memories, some also not good memories. Boy, those were hard days. They were hot days, some days, everything else. But yeah, the Forestry Center of Cremora, very, very busy. The Department of Forestry statewide looking for 12 species of acorns and nuts. And they do this every year. They ask the public to collect and donate nuts to be planted at the state nursery for people like, you know, the young me to pick up eventually and harvest and collect and throw onto the back of a truck, and they get bundled and everything else. It's really neat. The seeds that are donated will produce next year's hardwood seedling crop, which will be sold to forest landowners. Seedlings grown from the Virginian grown seeds produce trees that best thrive in our state's climate. So that's part of the circle of life, I guess you could say. They'd rather get the acorns and nuts from Virginia based locations, just because that's going to thrive best in our climate. Let's see. I wanted to see if there were numbers, and I don't think there's any numbers in this story. But essentially, it's not like a rush on this. Nuts must be delivered to a VDOF office by October 15th. So you don't have to drive them to Cremora. You can take them wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can take them to your local Department of Forestry office. They'll eventually get them to Cremora. And there's also information in a story on our website about how you can look up on the VDOF website. We have a link to what you need to do as far as that, but really
yeah, the
neat.
Storage, I mean, the storage, how you want to do to you yeah. actually deliver them. There's that kind of information. There's also, if you're not sure, you know, if there's acorns in your yard, but you're not really sure what kind of, you know, tree it is, the species of the tree, you can actually call the Forestry Center as well, and they'll help you identify the tree. And that way, it just makes sure you don't collect a bunch of acorns for something that they're not looking for. But you can also collect them, you know, in parking lots and things of that nature, that kind of thing. So basically, just before you do the work, make sure it's actually what they're looking for. So there's some information in the story on Augusta Free Press about the phone number that you can call, as well as, like you said, some frequently asked questions. And you've got a lot of information there about how they really want them brought in. And after you pick them up, if you're going to hold on to them for a little while before you deliver them, what you should do there as well. So I just think that's a fascinating thing. I've never been involved with the Department of Forestry. I had no idea that they did that, but what a neat little thing.
Yeah. And I'm looking at that phone number, and it's so weird. I mean, that would have been 34, 35 years ago that I worked there. It's the same phone number. So, I mean, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And also, I lived across the road, and it was a long distance phone call. One of those weird things. You're right on the line.
Because it's a 363 number, and that's really a New Hope number, because I lived in New Hope and I had a 363 number. So New Hope to Cremora was long distance. That's one of the things that I always hated growing up. Just a little tangent here, but I lived in Verona, which was a 248 phone number. And a lot of our really good friends lived in Cremora, and they, you know, those were long distance calls. And I remember my mother getting really upset, especially with my twin sister, because she would get $300 phone bills because she was calling people in Cremora or she was calling people in Rockbridge. Now, these days, of course, cell phones pretty much make every call local. So we certainly have eliminated that issue. But we were one of those households when the phone bill came in, it was always hidden for a week or two. And we were able to get the mail before mom got home from work. And but there were many times growing up, we grew up pretty lower middle class, that our phone, at least the long distance portion of our phone, was disconnected because of these long distance calls.
You had to have friends who were local. I remember that part. Yeah. Even Stanton was a long distance call for everybody. So yeah.
The problem was they threw us all into Stewart Middle School, and we were all friends there, you know, and then they separated us when we went to high schools. And so then you didn't see those same friends every single day. So the phone was the only way to keep in touch. So
those were interesting days. Yeah. The kids listening to this, if there are any kids listening to this, are like, what language are they speaking here? Long distance phone calls.
Could bring up party lines, and that would really throw people for a a loop, right?
Yeah, you had, I don't do it anymore because you use a cell phone, but when I would just pick up the phone instinctively just to listen if anybody was talking. And I did that for many years after not having a party line, but a party line was essentially you shared a line with neighbors. I mean, there might be four or five people. And if you're the guy living down the street was on the phone, you had to wait to make your phone call. That's a different world, man. I tell you what.
Yeah, I tell you, and that really dates you too, because I don't remember party lines, but
and I'm 4 years older than you, and I remember them vividly. Yes, yes.
Yes, and then of course rotary dial phones. Holy smokes, what would kids do with those today?
Yeah, we don't even have a phone in our house that's like on the wall. I mean, I think when we looked at this house a year ago, wasn't there still? I don't know if the phone was still here, but
yeah, there was actually a phone. Yeah. There was a phone in the kitchen that was attached to the wall. And that was one of the things I had our handyman do, was kind of put like a plate over it. That's not a phone jack, you know, because we knew we weren't going to be having an actual phone line.
Remember how you would always buy that long cord so you could have the longer cord. And then the advancement in life that came when you got the cordless phone.
Ooh.
You had to have a battery in it, of course, but the cordless phone, I mean, just the ability to like walk into like a room and shut the door, but you had to have the long cord for so long, just so mom and dad couldn't listen to whatever you were saying to your friends on the phone. So, man, those were the days.
Those were the days. And just, you know, speaking of the days, so to speak, September 11th, I thought I would just mention 20-year anniversary of that coming up on Saturday, Chris. I'm not sure what, if anything, you want to say about that, but just thought that we should mention that that's coming up.
I just thought, you know, I mean, I can't believe it's been 20 years. When I put this down on the list of topics for the day, for today's podcast, it just made me think back to, I mean, we were working together. We'd been married for not even a year at that stage. We got married in 2000. So that was not quite a year for us in September 11, 2001, but we were working together. One thing I think is a reason we have a TV in our home office, and make sure that it's on to a news or sports or weather channel, is the lessons of that day. You were actually already we worked together at a newspaper called the Charlottesville Albemarle Observer. And we also, that company put out we were actually getting ready for our first edition. I remember this, the Shenandoah Valley Observer. They were both weekly papers, and, it was a Tuesday morning, and you were already in Charlottesville, and I was getting ready to come over with Patrick Height, who is now one of the top reporters at the News Leader in Stanton, has been for a number of years, actually. We were going to come over a little later in the day and read over the pages that you were laying out that day. We were already done with our edition. We just were waiting for the pages to go up on the board and read. So I was running, we were running a little behind, Patrick and I were, and it was about 8:45 or so in the morning. You were already in Charlottesville. I was in Waynesboro, and I remember turning I had the TV on the Today Show. And I remember the anchors talking, it would have been Matt Lauer and Katie Couric. They were talking about something odd, a small plane had apparently hit one of the World Trade Center towers. And it was like, of course, it wasn't a small plane, as it turned out. We know it was a 747, but they thought it was a small plane. And it was so weird because it was such a sunny day. It was sunny down here, too. It was a beautiful day. It was September 11th. It was just a beautiful late summer, early fall day. Amazing weather, clear day. And so Al Roker, I remember saying how odd that was, that a plane would have hit the World Trade Center, because there's no visibility issues. And so they had the shot of the World Trade Center with what it looked like a small plane had hit it. And then there was a live shot of the second plane hitting. And then, I mean, I was watching.
Yeah, I remember you called me, because in our office at the Charlottesville Observer, there was no TV, you know. Right. And so you were kind of telling me what was happening as you were watching it on TV. And I remember I was relaying that to the newsroom, the folks that were working out of that newsroom, and they were all, you know, pulling it up on their computers and that kind of thing. At least we had that. I think it was much later in the afternoon before we somehow got a TV in there and could watch a little bit of it, you know. And again, the office wasn't really set up for cable or anything like that, but somehow we managed to get one of the basic channels, maybe with some rabbit ears, speaking of things from way back when.
Yeah.
And we watched kind of what was happening. And I remember it was probably like 1 o'clock that day. And I remember saying, whatever we thought the paper was going to be, that's out the window. We're starting from scratch now. And we started looking for local angles to what was this big national story. And, you know, at the time it wasn't just one paper, you know, even though they were weekly papers, we were, you know, working on the Charlottesville Albemarle, and then we had to look at redoing the Shenandoah Valley Observer too. So we kind of went back to the drawing board and assigned everybody stories and got to work on that. So I remember that being kind of crazy as from a work perspective and trying to find those local angles throughout all that. The other thing that I really remember, Chris, and this is just going to go off topic just a tad, was my grandfather passed away less than a week after September 11th. And that was the first grandfather of mine who had passed away. And I just remember that planes weren't back in the sky yet. He passed away on September 17th. And so my grandfather was from Minnesota, which is where I was born. And I remember, you know, my dad calling me and telling me what had happened and saying, pack a bag. And I was finishing one of the editions of the paper. So I stayed and finished that and basically got to my house, and my dad was already waiting on me. So I had 5 minutes to throw some stuff in a bag. And we got in the car and drove to Minnesota. We picked up family in Pennsylvania and we drove to Minnesota. And for those of you that don't know, that's about a 24-hour drive. At least it was for us. And my sister was pregnant at the time. With her first child. So
who's now in college?
Who's now in college. Yeah. So she was very, very grumpy on that drive as well. Bless her heart. So just to say that, you know, because of what had happened on September 11th, that very much impacted our family, you know, as we traveled to Minnesota for that. Otherwise we would have all hopped on planes and, you know, it would have been a different time, but, you know, go ahead.
I was gonna say, to get back to that morning, you know, you guys were in the dark literally because of the fact that, you know, newsrooms weren't wired the same way they are now. And the world wasn't wired the same way it is now. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. There was no YouTube in 2001. It's hard to think about that, actually. And it just occurred to me that that's the case, but there was none of that. We were still relying on TV. We were still relying on CNN and whatever news organization. I had CNN on eventually. I think I probably left NBC on for a while because that's where I first saw. But, you know, we didn't know what was happening. I mean, so, and I'm watching it. You guys weren't. I'm relaying it to you guys. I remember that day. And then in the newsroom, I was across the phone there, probably a long distance call, going back to what you're talking about there. But not knowing for the first couple of hours what in the hell was going on, I remember a fear that I don't know that I've had since. It felt like we were under attack. I mean, because you didn't know where it was coming from. Who's doing this? To us. So because the first two planes hit the World Trade Center, then there were reports. Certainly the Pentagon was hit, you know, not long after. There were every plane in the air all of a sudden was being treated as a weapon because that's what they were. I mean, you didn't know what they were. Planes were being taken down. You know, the pilots were basically landing as close as they could from wherever they were, because again, if not, at some point they were going to be treated as threats. I remember hearing about how the Secret Service ushered quickly George W. Bush, then still a very new president. He was only in office for, 8 months at that stage? Not quite 8 months. He was ushered onto Air Force One, and they were flying him around the country because they figured he was a target. You had to figure. I mean, you don't know what's going on, so you had to figure he's a target. And you just don't know where the threats are coming from. There were all kinds of, we've learned since that breaking news reports can be very unreliable. And this wasn't the internet era. This wasn't the Twitter era or anything else. But, you know, I remember telling you once over the phone, hey, it's, you know, someone just saw something on the National Mall. A bomb's on the National Mall, I think is what they said. And what was the report that came across one of the news organizations. And it was just a scary, scary day. And then at some point, yeah, Crystal, we realized this isn't just a national story. This is a local story. And so we live not far from downtown Waynesboro. I walked down downtown, City Hall downtown. There were a couple restaurants downtown. And people were, this is something we all will start to remember when we start thinking about 20 years ago. But there were already that afternoon, not even afternoon. It was not even lunchtime yet. And there were people gathered out like, in the streets, you know, we were just all talking with each other. I remember going to maybe Grand Furniture was still downtown. I don't remember, but I remember going into a store and there were people glued. It was Grand Furniture was still downtown then. Now it's on the West End, and there were people glued to the TVs in Grand Furniture downtown. They had TVs on every different network, and we were all talking. And then all of a sudden, you start realizing this is when we realized this was not a national. I mean, it was a national story, but also a local story, because so many people who were watching were saying, "Hey, I've got family members in New York." One guy said that a wife's close relative worked in one of the World Trade Center buildings, and we're like, "Oh my God, this is a local story."
It really is. I remember when I was graduating from Virginia Tech, my good friend, whose name was Christina, interesting because my twin sister's name was Christina, but my best friend in college, she was looking at jobs, and the first job that she was offered was actually at the World Trade Center. And it ended up being a job that didn't work out for a variety of reasons. But I was thankful that day that it didn't work out, because she could have been one of the many people in the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I remember is another local angle, so to speak, was Bob Johnson, who's a local pastor. I remember how he went to the World Trade Center sometime after, once they were accepting volunteers and things of that nature. He went there as a chaplain, and he kind of counseled the people who were there, the rescuers who were there searching for remains, the people who were there in the ruins, the volunteers, that kind of thing. And he eventually wrote a book about that. That was the first edition of it anyway, was published by Augusta Free Press. He eventually got picked up by a Christian publisher, and it was republished with some minor changes made to it. But you know, you think about the people who locally kind of gave up everything and went to pitch in one way, shape, or another. And he's just one example.
I'm remembering a name. I want to say John Green, and I'm not sure about John Green's status now. This is 20 years ago, but John Green was a local. He worked for the Waynesboro. He was volunteered with the Waynesboro First Aid Crew, and he went up and volunteered as well. We did a story for our Observer. You know, maybe not the first week, obviously, because that was that day. We had deadline that day. But I'm sure I remember, gosh, for weeks afterwards. I remember Rio Hatfield put together a local collection drive to collect items.
And I think Tim Spears did as well. Music City sent several truckloads of things. I just remember there being calls for things like water and different things that they needed there, and that these
essential items,
these community people were stepping up and delivering these items to New York.
My friend Brian Gokenauer, you might remember, he put together, he went to a couple of local schools, Castle School. I think he had a nephew maybe in Castle Elementary School, and he got he asked teachers there to get kids to write cards to first responders, and because he was planning, we were both planning. In fact, you wouldn't let me go. I remember you were so concerned about safety there, and I was honestly a little too. But we were planning to go to New York to watch the Mets play the Braves. And he had asked me to tag along with him on this trip. And then he made it into a, because he's a big Braves fan. I should preface it with that. And he made the trip to go see the Mets play the Braves. And he also took hundreds of handmade cards by kids from Castle Elementary School and took them to Ground Zero. And so local kids' cards were donated there. And then it's a sports memory kind of thing, but you know, obviously sports were shut down for over a week. UVA was supposed to play, in fact, a Thursday night game against Penn State on that week, two nights after this. And of course that game got pushed back to December. Sports were canceled everywhere, NFL, baseball, everything for a week. The very first game that was played after this was the following, I want to say Wednesday, and Brian was there. It was in New York. The Mets were playing the Braves because Brian was there. And Brian, a big Braves fan to this day, and Braves fans hate the Mets, to say the least. there's a healthy hatred there, or unhealthy hatred there. Mike Piazza, Hall of Fame catcher, playing for the Mets, hit a walk-off homer in the bottom of the ninth. The Mets were losing the game, and they hit a walk-off homer. Not a dry eye in the place. Brian talking about how he was on his hands, he was on his feet cheering because of that moment. That World Series that year, the Yankees made the World Series. They lost the World Series, but they won all three games in New York, the last two with walk-off homers. You know, sports helped bring people back a little bit together, but we were all, you remember this, Crystal, how we weren't Republicans or Democrats. We weren't blue or red state. And this was just a few months after a very, very contentious presidential election. and we were just Americans there for a while.
Yeah, and that was the next thing I was going to talk about, too. I mean, you look at how divisive things are today, 20 years later, you know, after another, hotly contested election where the incumbent lost. And, you know, the way that neighbors came together. I mean, I remember people saying, like, how nice it was just that maybe for the first time, instead of just going about your business, you stopped for a minute and you talked to your neighbor. And there were a lot of moments of silence and things where you stepped outside your door and that kind of thing. And I think it really brought communities across the nation together. You know, we were one, we were all Americans at that time. And it was a really special time for people to come together. And I mean, it was by far just such a tragedy for our nation. But that was the one positive thing maybe that came out of it, is how we all came together afterwards as one. And it was some time before really that broke down again. But
a few months, unfortunately, yeah. And then it did break down. And that's the, you know, here we are 20 years later. And, you know, I mean, I don't sense it necessarily, but one of the hopes that a lot of us have is that, you know, maybe the commemorations this weekend can make us remember that again. I mean, again, that was not a time when there have been times. I mean, I remember growing up, I've been a person who's followed politics closely since I was a little kid. We weren't always at each other's throats. We would have elections and then we'd get back to being Americans again. You know, we maybe this will make us remember that again and do that, you know. And, you know, we go for walks in our neighborhood. We were on a walk last night and, you know, there's people with political, there's an election in Virginia every year, and there's people with political signs in our yard. We're among them. And, you know, wouldn't it be great if, because we were talking last night on our walk, we talked with people who share our political sympathies. We're Democrats, and the folks who we were talking with are Democrats. Wouldn't it be great, though, if one of our Republican neighbors could walk by and would stop and say something, and it'd be positive, you know, right. And we could do the same for our Republican neighbors. It'd be great, you know, because we have... That's the thing we have to remember is that we 95% or more of life we all agree on. We're Americans. We believe in lots of common things. There's a few things we disagree on, obviously, and we can disagree on those things. We're free to do that in this country. But, you know, we allow ourselves to be defined by what separates us, not by what unites us. And for several months after 9/11, we focused on what unites us. And man, oh, man, we shouldn't have to wait for another horrible thing like 9/11 to happen again. That was just, I remember that night, Crystal, we're talking about acorns. I didn't sleep that night because I was writing and I also just couldn't sleep. I now know because I'm an anxiety ridden person. I didn't know that then, but, I remember at 5 a.m, we had an apartment then right across from the Waynesboro YMCA. And I'm sitting at my computer working in our little office we had in that apartment. And, there was a carport in the next door neighbors, between our house and the next door neighbors, and an acorn fell from a tree and hit it. And it was 5 a.m. It was dead silent. You know, I had the window open. It was a cool morning, and that acorn sounded like a bomb going off. And I remember my eyes got real big. I got scared. My heart was pounding for a good few minutes before I realized it was just an acorn.
Yeah. So just a couple other things to mention, you know, if you've ever been to New York, I definitely recommend you go to the September 11th Memorial. They have a museum now that's open as well. When we were there, the museum wasn't open. And then when it was open, it was so busy that you had to like get those tickets well in advance, which we didn't know and haven't done. So we still need to see the museum portion of it. I think actually we went through it a partial when partial, it was yeah, kind yeah. of like under construction, but since they completed it, we haven't actually been through that. So we did because we had to wait, you know, everything had to be scanned before you went in.
We had to take our belt and shoes off and everything.
Right. Yeah, that was when it was in progress, but it's completed now. And I haven't actually been in there since it's been 100% complete. But I'll say that there's nothing kind of, it really hits at home when you're there. The memorial with the water, the sound of the water, and whenever it's anybody's birthday, they place a rose. There's like a place for you to place the rose by their name, and they do that for everyone who died that day. And it's just a remarkable memorial for those who died as part of this tragedy. And it's definitely worthwhile to go see if you haven't been there. I've been there a couple of times with you, and then also when I was in town for a conference with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And the people that I had gone there with had never been there before. And it's just, it really takes your breath away. It was a nice way to remember the people who unfortunately died that day. So
what for those who haven't been, what they've done there is essentially the base of where the buildings were that stood there are now, there's just running water. And it really just, it hits you how big, I mean, how big those buildings had to be to see this huge area mm-hmm. with nothing that used to be the home to what, 110 story or I think roughly 110 story, 210 story buildings. And it just hits you. And then you start realizing how many people died that day. And, the day of, you didn't know how many people were there, and there were estimates that it could have been as many as 50,000 people in those buildings. And to say only 3,000 died, it really hits you that that's what people did to other people. We go to DC all the time, Crystal. So you drive by the Pentagon, and when you go to Nats games, you drive by the Pentagon. There's a memorial in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where the brave passengers had heard the news. Obviously, there were cell phones, early cell phones. We had cell phones then; they were flip phones. And some folks who were on that plane heard the news from family members. Hey, the three other planes, two of them hit the World Trade Center, one hit the Pentagon, and a group of very brave passengers stormed the cockpit, and knowing that it was going to kill them all. I mean, that just what a stark choice to have to make in life. We're either going to die hitting the Capitol or the White House, or we're going to die here in the middle of Pennsylvania, but we're going to die.
Yeah, I remember.
But instead of just dying passively, we're going to die actively, and we're going to take this plane down now. Can you imagine?
Family members who said before they stormed the cockpit, many of them called their family members just to say, I love you one last time. And hearing the stories about that was just so heart-wrenching after this, because some of the people who died, in the World Trade Center were able to call their loved ones as well, but most were not. And so it was just a tragedy all around. And I thought I'd mention too, Chris, just that there are a couple of events going on. I don't know if there's any like locally Stanton, Waynesboro, Harrisonburg. I haven't heard about them. So if you know about those events, please be sure to let us know about that. But there is one going on in Richmond, Commonwealth Patriot Day ceremony that's going to be held on Saturday at 11 a.m. in the, I think it's the Heilman Amphitheater on the grounds of the Virginia War Memorial in Richmond. And so it's going to commemorate that 20th anniversary with a keynote address. And the public's invited to attend that ceremony. So I'm sure that there will be a large attendance at an event in a city as large as Richmond. And there's lots more information. You posted links to that in a story that you wrote about what's going on there on Augusta Free Press. So you can definitely check that out there. But if there are local ceremonies that are taking place, definitely let us know about those as well so that we can share those on our social media accounts, as well as on our website, AugustaFreePress.com.
Yeah. And the sports and life connection again, Virginia Tech are both hosting football games. It would surprise the heck out of me if there aren't commemorations pregame for that. I remember, Crystal, the first game we went to after 9/11, Virginia played Duke. It was September 27th of that year, or no, 29th of that year. And I didn't watch much of the game because UVA had a group of first responders that I think I want to attribute it to Paul Tudor Jones, the guy who eventually helped build the John Paul Jones Arena, flew them down for this. But UVA honored four of the first responders. And my whole mission during that game was not covering the game, but was finding those four guys and interviewing those four guys. And we eventually got in the locker room and interviewed those. If you remember, Crystal, we actually were in the UVA locker room interviewing those four guys. And it took me almost the whole game to find out that I could do that. And that's all I cared about. I wrote a story about the game. I'm sure I watched maybe two minutes of the game. But yeah, the sports life connection there, a local college football game near you. I think VMI is at home this weekend. JMU should be home this weekend. UVA and Virginia Tech are, I know they are. Anybody who has information about local ceremonies, it's helpful. I mean, it's just the way the calendar works, but it's helpful that it's Saturday. So, I remember the first several years after 9/11, 2001, that the Waynesboro Fire Department did ceremonies. I don't know that we've done one in the last few years here, but But yeah, if you know anything, let us know. We would love to share that information.
And just before we wrap up, Chris, as you know, I'm very involved in suicide prevention. And this is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month in September. But September 10th, which is actually Friday, is World Suicide Prevention Day. And I wanted to mention that only because what you can do if you're interested in participating is you're asked to light a candle near a window at 8 p.m. to show your support for suicide prevention or to remember a lost loved one. And that's something that I usually take part in and encourage you to do so as well. Also on September 11th, I'm gonna be taking part in the Mental Health America of Augusta. They're doing a walk, a 5K walk in Stanton at Gypsy Hill Park. They call it Running Down Stigma is the walk name. And so while that will be taking place on September 11th, that's more about mental health and about you know, what we can do locally to build mentally healthy communities. So that will be taking part on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. and I will be taking part in that walk as well. So I just wanted to mention that. If you'd like more information on that, you can find a story on Augusta Free Press, or you can also go to the Mental Health America of Augusta website if you search that. So just wanted to mention both the light a candle aspect as well as that walk taking place this weekend.
We got a lot going on. That's great to hear. Well, Crystal, anything else on your agenda for our podcast this week?
No, I don't think so. So just, you know, have a great week, everyone. Certainly the weather looks fabulous. I don't think that there's going to be any rain this week. So, but the temperatures are very mild, probably very what they should be for this time of year, you know, as we're starting to get closer to fall. And I'm not ready for pumpkins yet. I've seen pumpkins in some of the neighbors' backyards, and I admire them for getting an early start. I know once September 1st rolls around, it's time for pumpkin spice lattes and cold brews and that kind of thing. So, but I think I'm starting to get there. So I think this weekend after my walk on Saturday, it might be time to break that stuff out.
Well, I'll encourage, as we're wrapping up here, I'll encourage folks to take a walk around these beautiful evenings you're going to have after you make dinner and, you know, get things settled down from your work day. Take a walk and maybe say hi to a neighbor, even one who doesn't agree with you, just to talk with them and, you know, let's build that community back up again. So for Crystal Graham, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Thanks, everyone, for your time today. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham. Get up-to-the-minute local news, politics, and sports online at AugustaFreePress.com.